Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Mitchell Fain.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Queercast show number 541. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Mitchell Fain.
And we're back here, and this is the big show that I'm very proud of, because I've at least just been a part of the family, a small part of the family, at the Broadway Playhouse every week of the show To Master the Art by William Brown and Doug Frew, directed by Bill Brown. This was a show that was a hit at the Timeline Theater in 2010. That's a very small, intimate theater in Lakeview in our neighborhood. They do plays about history and things that impacted our history, and they commissioned a play about the life and the work of Julia Child. The play was a very big success, and now here, 3 years later, Broadway in Chicago, our big commercial producer in town that brings to town Jersey Boys and Wicked and Book of Mormon, along with a new company called the Chicago Commercial Collective, joined forces to bring To Master the Art, the story of Julia Child, and her life in France prior to becoming a superstar in America, to the Broadway Playhouse downtown on Michigan Avenue in a beautiful 500-seat theater, so more people could experience storefront theater. And this in and of itself, Mitchell, I think is revolutionary and super, super cool that there would be this thought that a couple of times a year there'd be opportunities for a small show to have a larger audience in Chicago, which is what's happening 8 times a week downtown. So get your tickets now. I'm telling you, men, women, young, old, you don't have to know anything about Julia Child, or you could be a huge Julia Child fan. This show, every night I go to watch the show, and I go a few times a week. I'm down at the theater, and I hear people at intermission or leaving the theater, and everybody, I mean, it gets a standing ovation every show. And I just was at one of our big houses the other night, one of the Chicago theaters, press opening, and no standing ovations. So this just doesn't happen all the time, guys.
Right.
It's happening every show consistently, naturally, definitely by the time the lead actress walks out. And you were saying last week on our Emmy show that you had a connection with Julia Child coming to see the circus. We were talking about Julia Child.
So I have this very different...
I mean, do you remember Julia Child before you go back there? Let me take your personal experience. Because I remember watching television.
My grandmother had
when
her
the
books.
Television sat on the floor in a wooden thing.
Right.
You know?
My grandmother had her books. My grandmother was a wonderful cook. And my grandmother had her books.
Mm-hmm.
And so anything that my grandmother, Bessie, God rest her soul, and she was a very... She's just a huge part of my life. And so anything that she owned took on special sort of like a mythological meaning to me. Her records, her her clothes, her books, her anything Bessie did to me was like legend when I was little. And so she had these books. And so when she would cook, she was not an exact cook, but she would throw open a book at a recipe and she'd sort of look at it and then throw stuff together. And one of the ones that she did all the time, especially the desserts, was...
Mastering the Art.
Was Julia Child's book. And so this is a story. I was actually not there, but this is a secondhand story, but it's a true story. One of my dear friends is this young fellow who's also a circus performer named Pat, who you know.
Yes, and he's in the big Circus in the Parks.
Yes, he's in the Circus in the Parks. Yes, exactly. Which runs through the end of October. Check mm-hmm. your local listings.
Brilliant.
It's really brilliant and just joy from
my favorite thing every
from age one to age
fall.
90. It's just
great.
Joy, joy, joy. If you want to smile, go see Circus in the Parks. And so Pat, who's an amazing performer, also is a trained and very extraordinary chef.
Yes.
He went to the Culinary Institute of America. But he's wanted to be a chef since he was a little kid. Like, mm-hmm. I think before he even really knew what that meant.
Yep.
He just always wanted to. And when, I think he was 10 or 11, he was on tour with Circus Smirkus in New England.
Which is what you've talked about a lot a here, where you taught.
The youth circus. And who came but Julia Child. And somebody said to Julia...
She had to have been very old.
She was old.
Very old.
But this
old.
Is, we're talking maybe 12, 14, 15 years ago. So it was a while. Yeah. Pat was very young. And somebody mentioned to her when she came backstage to meet people, to meet the kids and stuff like that. Because when celebrities come,
yep.
they want to get a picture and stuff. And so somebody mentioned to Julia that Pat was the burgeoning little chef and that he was always cooking and, cooking up stuff and that he goes fishing and then he cooks things. And she took all this time to sit with him, talk with him. They went into the kitchen of the barn and they cooked something together. And he tells the story. He's like a 30-year-old man now. And he tells this story about this woman who he was vaguely aware of.
Yes.
Not really. He was sort of told that she was famous for being a chef. But he remembers her being so funny and so warm and so encouraging and so enormous.
Yes.
Because right? he was a tiny little boy.
She's a large
Literally a little boy, right. Large person and a large woman.
Yeah.
And it was life-changing for him because she mm-hmm. planted the seed that not only was this a really cool thing and it made him feel very special,
mm-hmm.
but also that it was quite a possibility to make his living,
mm-hmm.
To put in a young person's mind this thing that you love to do that maybe some people tease you about or
mm-hmm.
that this could be what you do with your life mm-hmm. if you love this. And so he has a really special place in his heart for,
mm.
I think it's just a lovely story.
Well, he is going to have to listen to this show, yeah. So we're going to have to tip him off as well to download
Yeah, I think he and I are going to go together.
Today's podcast. Absolutely. Well, I need to tell you what's going on in the GLBT news and also in theater. The world of theater is heating up, folks. But nothing's hotter than the kitchen of Julia Child. And we're going to be back with Bill Brown and Doug Frew sitting down with me at the Broadway Playhouse talking about their show To Master the Art. You ain't nothing but
a hound dog. Million Dollar Quartet, Chicago's hit rock and roll musical, is now extended through January. Relive the legendary night Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, and Elvis Presley played together for the first and only time. Don't miss the show the Chicago Tribune calls a hit. The Chicago Sun-Times calls the show musically dazzling from first beat to last. Million Dollar Quartet, now playing at the Apollo Theater. Visit Ticketmaster.com.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Weekend News.
The conservative group National Organization for Marriage is behind an effort to repeal a California law that allows transgender students to use bathrooms that correspond with their gender identity while at school. The organization is planning for a ballot initiative in November of 2014 to repeal the law through a voter initiative.
In Huntington Beach, California, 16-year-old Cassidy Lynn Campbell has become Marina High School's first transgender homecoming queen. Although she faced some backlash after being named one of the top 10 contenders for the crown, Campbell, who, up until 3 years ago, lived as Lance Campbell, did not let the negativity deter her.
In the U.S. House of Representatives, Idaho Republican Raul Labrador introduced the Marriage and Religious Freedom Act, which is designed to make it possible for government and private agencies to deny legally married same-sex couples the same rights and freedoms heterosexual couples enjoy. However, several LGBT organizations have spoken out against the measure.
Sean Eldridge, the husband of Facebook co-founder Chris Hughes, has formally announced his 2014 congressional campaign in New York. At age 27, he will run as a Democrat for New York's 19th congressional district in the Upper Hudson Valley.
The U.S. Senate voted September 24th to confirm openly gay nominee Todd Hughes to serve on the U.S. Circuit Court for the Federal Circuit. The 98-0 vote makes Hughes the first openly gay nominee to be confirmed for a Federal Circuit position. A native of Ohio, Hughes, 47, graduated from Harvard and then Duke Law School.
A new poll from Indiana shows that nearly two-thirds of Hoosier voters oppose a proposed constitutional amendment to outlaw same-sex marriage, civil unions, and domestic partnerships. Former Governor Mitch Daniels is rumored to announce his opposition to the amendment soon and has reportedly been quietly lobbying Republican legislators to let the bill die.
President George H.W. Bush and Barbara Bush attended and witnessed the wedding of friends in a same-sex ceremony in Maine. Bonnie Clement and Helen Thorgelson, who own HB Provisions, a Kennebunk, Maine general store, got the former president's official stamp of approval, although Bush has not officially declared his position on same-sex marriage. Same-sex marriage was legalized in Maine in December of 2012.
In world news, in Taiwan, more than 1,200 people joined a mock wedding banquet aimed at gathering support for a same-sex marriage bill Parliament will be debating soon. Gay and lesbian groups in Taiwan, one of Asia's more liberal societies, have been urging the government for years to make same-sex unions legal.
Preteen Dutch children raised by female same-sex parents scored significantly higher on core principles of democratic citizenship than their peers in heterosexual parent families. The 32 children raised by female couples were matched with 32 children reared by opposite-sex parents on the bases of age, gender, parental educational level, and parental ethnicity. The report stated that the findings suggest that growing up in a non-traditional family may be associated with a greater appreciation of diversity and the development of good citizenship.
Two gay men were among the dozens of people murdered in the Kenya terrorist massacre. The attack began September 21st when militants entered the Westgate Mall throwing grenades and firing automatic weapons. Kenyan gay rights activist Dennis Nkuzia confirmed on Facebook that two gay men were killed during the four-day development. A third gay man, identified as JJ, was confirmed to be involved in the mall takeover as well, but this phone connection died and it is unknown if he survived.
The trial of four men accused of beating a gay man to death in Santiago, Chile last year began September 23rd. Prosecutors contend four self-described neo-Nazis attacked Daniel Zamudio in a Santiago park on March 3rd, 2012 because he was gay. Authorities allege the four men attacked Zamudio with bottles and other blunt objects before they cut off part of his ear, carved swastikas into his chest, and burned other parts of his body with cigarettes.
A lesbian explorer has become the first woman to row unaccompanied from Japan to Alaska. Sarah Outen, a British native, touched shore in Adak, a town in the Aleutian Islands, after a solo journey across the Pacific Ocean. During her five-month trek, the 28-year-old Oxford University graduate also became engaged, proposing to her girlfriend on a satellite cell phone.
Gay rights groups are calling for a boycott of the world's largest pasta maker, Barilla, after the company's chair said he would never use same-sex couples in his ads. Guido Barilla, whose firm has almost half the Italian pasta market and a quarter of that in the U.S., told an Italian radio show, "I would never do an advert with a homosexual family. If the gays don't like it, they can go and eat another brand."
In entertainment news, Jennifer Lopez will receive the 2013 Ally for Equality Award from the HRC. Lopez executive produces ABC Family's hit TV series, The Fosters, which is about a multi-ethnic family mix of foster and biological kids being raised by two moms.
Benedict Cumberbatch, TV Sherlock, and of Star Trek, will star in the Alan Turing biopic, The Imitation Game. Turing, credited with cracking the German Enigma code during World War II, was eventually convicted for indecency for being gay and chemically castrated before committing suicide in 1954.
LGBT rights advocate Andrew Kravis won $2.6 million on the NBC game show Million Second Quiz. Kravis is an LGBT rights advocate and Columbia Law School grad who is about to start a fellowship at Lambda Legal.
Bravo has set a reunion special for Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. Andy Cohen will host Queer Eye Reunion 10 years later in October, and it will bring the Fab Five back together. The original show ran 2003 to 2007, a run of 100 episodes.
Sting's musical theater project, The Last Ship, will have its world premiere at Chicago's Bank of America Theater on June 10, 2014. The five-week run in Chicago precedes an opening on Broadway next fall. The musical has an original score by Sting and a book by John Logan of Red and Brian Yorkey of Next to Normal, and is directed by Joe Mantello of Wicked fame.
Harry Potter star Daniel Radcliffe may play the late Queen frontman Freddie Mercury in a biopic. Sacha Baron Cohen was previously attached to the biographical project, but pulled out earlier this year after disagreeing with the film's direction.
PBS will air Elton John in concert Saturday, October 5th. The special will feature John singing in the BBC's Radio Theatre in the heart of West London. The concert special showcases the multi-Grammy Award-winning superstar performing songs from his new album, The Diving Board, and many of his classic hits.
Three gay men, playwright Terrell Alvin McCraney, pianist writer Jeremy Denk, and dancer choreographer Kyle Abraham are among those who receive the MacArthur Genius Grants. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation's grants are often termed the Genius Grants, but it's also essential for progress in creative and scientific fields since it comes with a no-strings-attached stipend of $650,000.
And Olivia Travel, which offers vacations for the lesbian community, announced Meredith Baxter will take part in the Equality and Leadership Summit cruise the company is hosting. She joins keynote speaker Dr. Maya Angelou, civil rights pioneer Edie Windsor, Florida Congresswoman and chair of the DNC, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the Indigo Girls and National Center for Lesbian Rights Executive Director Kate Kendall. The summit will take place February 1st through the 8th, 2014, and is a chartered Caribbean cruise. And that's the Week in News, brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hey, this is Emily from the Indigo Girls, and you are listening to the Windy City Queercast.
Culture Club, Culture Club, Culture Club. Theater,
music,
dance,
art,
performance,
provocative,
hilarious,
exciting,
queer,
innovative,
campy,
edgy,
original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of September 30th, 2013, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Dive headlong into a theatrical fable that celebrates the power of imagination. The Old Man and the Old Moon creates an epic new mythology about a man whose job is to collect spilled light to refill the leaking moon. Resonant storytelling, spirited indie folk music, and inventive puppetry from Pigpen Theater Company create a theatrical experience that will win you over with its wit, style, and depth of emotion. Don't miss The Old Man and the Old Moon, now playing at Writers Theater in Glencoe, just minutes from Chicago on the Edens or the Metra. For tickets, visit writerstheater.org.
Chicago Shakespeare Theater's season kicks off with Cyrano de Bergerac. Star of stage and screen Harry Groener plays the nobleman whose gift for romance is shadowed by an all-too-prominent nose. This sweeping production features stunning swordplay and some of the most witty, touching lines ever written. Now playing through November 10th. For tickets and more, visit chicagoshakes.com.
Nominated for 13 Tony Awards, In the Heights makes its Chicago debut by Rachel Rockwell at the lovely Paramount Theater in Aurora. The Tribune raves and gives it 3.5 stars. In the Heights is playing through October 6th. For tickets, visit ParamountAurora.com. Don't miss In the Heights, the show critics are calling a must-see this fall. That's ParamountAurora.com.
Winner of the Great Gay Play Contest, Directions for Restoring the Apparently Dead by Martin Casella is an intriguing drama by one of America's rising playwrights. Two men, one gay, one straight, who have been lifelong friends, take a trip to the English Lake Country. What happens next will surprise, delight, and move you. Directions for Restoring the Apparently Dead from Pride Films and Plays is at Stage 773, 1225 West Belmont through November 10th. For tickets, visit stage773.com.
Lifeline Theater proudly presents The Killer Angels, based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the Battle of Gettysburg. running Thursdays through Sundays to October 27th. For tickets to the Killer Angels, go to lifelinetheater.com.
It's an adventure full of charming heroes, sneering villains, love lost and found, and a setting perfect for the Halloween season as Remy Bumpo Theater presents Jane Austen's Northanger Abbey at the Greenhouse Theater Center through November 10th. It's Jane Austen at her most frolicsome, taking on the pop culture of her day with fun and romance, the winners. Get your tickets now at remybumpo.org.
Signs of Life, a new musical drama about the human spirit, runs now through October 27th at the Zacek McVeigh Theater at the Biograph. Signs of Life is based on the true story of one of the most fascinating and least known stories of the Holocaust. It shows the struggles of the captives as they try to expose the truth through art and music, and in doing so, discover the humanity they all share. For ticket information, visit victorygardens.org. Signs of Life runs through October 27th. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Anyone out there? Bueller? Bueller? Post a comment at WindyCityQueerCast.com.
Drives you crazy getting old. We can talk it so good, we can make it so divine. We can talk it good, how you wish it would be all the time.
Julia Child is a beloved American icon, the larger-than-life woman who through our televisions joined us in our kitchens and began the American cooking revolution. But how did it all start for Julia, her love affair with good food? William Brown and Doug Frew joined forces to tell just that love story in a beautiful and epic play called To Master the Art. In 2010, the play premiered at the intimate Timeline Theater in Lakeview, garnering huge audiences. Now, the show is in a magnificent restage at the Broadway Playhouse on Michigan Avenue at Water Tower through October 20th. And full disclosure, I am one of the understudies of this show, so I feel a part of the Two Master of the Art family. But I'm just thrilled to sit here between shows to chat with both these wonderfully talented men and generous men who have been on this journey with Julia. Hello,
hey,
guys.
How are you?
I'm great. Bill, Doug, how did you both meet? How did you meet?
Well,
and is it around theater, or is it around food, or both?
It was around theater. I write and direct a lot of industrial shows for various corporations, mm-hmm. and I was doing one, and we held auditions, and I cast Bill as Benjamin Franklin in a show that we were doing for a pharmaceutical company 20 years ago. It was a product launch.
Wow.
And we became fast friends very quickly. And as soon as we got back into town, then it centered around food.
Yes, indeed.
because we did the show in Orlando, mm-hmm. and we became good friends while we were working on the show. But the minute we got back, he invited me over to his apartment for dinner, and the rest is history.
Yeah. And good friends and good food. Well, then, Bill, obviously you've been on our show before, and yep. Chicagoans know you as an actor, whether it's the curmudgeon but beloved Scrooge at the Goodman, but also as a director with Writers Theater and Timeline. You were on our show last year with Wasteland. But is this your first foray into writing? And how did you walk up to the edge of that? Different
is.
Hat.
I mean, it was actually Juliet Hart's idea. She knew I loved food. She knew I loved Julia. And they at a retreat, they were talking about
this is
projects.
A Timeline. One of the
Timeline.
Yes,
mm-hmm. a member, company member at Timeline. And she said, I think Bill should write a one-woman show and play Julia.
A la Lady Bracknell.
Yes. I am my own chef. I called that version.
But, oh, how funny.
But I said that wasn't going to happen. But I said my friend Doug Frew actually has made a living as a writer all his life. He's the real deal. What if we did it together?
Mm.
And they were thrilled by that idea.
Mm-hmm.
And we started... it's such a vivid memory. Doug has a house in the country where lots of amazing meals have been served through the years. And we went over there, and we thought, let's start over there. We put on Julia's French onion soup, all this, put it in the oven. It takes 3.5 hours.
Wow.
And so the smells of that were wafting through his house as we wrote the first scene.
Mm.
And it was... I mean, it was thrilling. We had a ball. It was wonderful. And then we had the soup. But then I felt like got around to, well, let's take different strands of the story.
Because it's a huge story, her life.
Kind of,
and yet
is.
In a weird way, she's kind of one of these later in life creations.
Oh,
I
sure.
mean, you know, she was not
hope for
not
all
young.
Of us. Yeah.
There's hope for all of
she
us.
She never cooked at all until she was 39 years old when she went to Paris and started studying at the Cordon Bleu. She couldn't cook at all before that.
Right.
And she didn't publish the book till she was 50.
Right.
And was never on television until she was 51. So
I've heard that referred to as the postmenopausal bloom, as opposed to the postmenopausal blue.
Oh.
You know, the bloom,
well,
that there is
good.
This thing for a woman, you know?
I mean, but she, that really happened for her. She didn't know what she wanted to be when she grew up.
Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah. You know. And you talked about, when you were talking about making the French onion soup and sitting down to write that day in the country, and I think of that line in the play that says, you know, share what you know, share what you love.
Mm-hmm.
And this play just feels filled with love. There are so many love affairs going on. I mean, the genesis being your two love affairs with your friendship and working together and collaborating and creating and food and theater. But then that energy comes behind all of Julia's loves, which are really expressed in this play. What are those loves?
It also grew out of each of our individual and then our collective love affair with Julia Child, because we both.
And where is that rooted from? You know, because
she taught us how to cook.
She taught us how to cook. But as GLBT people, don't we feel also some sort of affinity with her? I mean, I don't mean that she's GLBT, but I just mean she's this kind of outsider, rogue, larger than life diva
rogue.
That we love, you know? I mean, that on the fringe.
Rogue. But it was the experience of cooking and sharing a meal was so much a part of who she was and what her message was. And I think that's what we relate to, too, because, you know, that's sort of how we maintain a community, among ourselves.
So absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, he grew up in a small town in Pennsylvania. I grew up in a small town in West Virginia. And this woman came on television that suggested, hey, there's a world out here.
Mm.
There's other foods. There's other ways to be and to love one another and entertain and celebrate.
It didn't have to be perfect.
It was more than
either, which was wonderful. It doesn't have to look like what you think it has to look like.
The whole thing
is
you can do this.
Absolutely. Mm. And as Bill always points out, you know, pretty wasn't her thing.
Mm-hmm.
She was not really that good at making it,
like,
but she didn't care because what mattered was the doing and then the sharing.
Mm-hmm. Boy, I mean, this was a fun play to research, I would imagine, you know, going back because I remember, you know, her being on television. It is the advent, right? Like, there would never have been a Paula Deen without a Julia
None of them.
Child.
No,
there would never
be
a Food Network. There would never have been a Food Network.
No,
they all admit
I mean, she kind of revolutionized this thing that brought a community into the preparation of food, which was probably a very solitary thing for the women, right?
Yeah.
In a kitchen in America leading up before that. I mean, I would just imagine that there's so many people who owe her an enormous debt.
Absolutely.
Of having experience with food. And it's such an emotional thing, right?
Smell. Yeah.
I mean, it's supposed to be the smell, the sense of smell, you know, and taste are these very visceral senses that we have. They're very emotionally connected. And you all have used that, too, in this play and how you created the play. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, you can
because I'm hungry
it.
Every damn time I come to the theater.
Yeah. Make reservations for after the show.
You and I sat together at last night's preview, and you kept talking about how hungry you were.
I was because I could smell the butter, I could smell the shallots, I could smell the food cooking, and you're just salivating. City, you know, it's like smell-o-vision. John Waters wished it had been this good, right?
Yeah,
you know,
but
it truly is. It truly is that kind of experience. What in doing the research, watching the videos, reading the biographies, you know, finding out as much as you could. What was the part of the story that surprised you that, oh, we're going to tell this part of her story, too?
How political it is.
Mm.
I mean, we went to Radcliffe, where all the letters and all the pictures are, and the letters, because they were away from home and family, the whole year, and this play is about the years in Europe, it's all documented by the letters they wrote home. And I would venture that there was more about politics than food. He worked for the State Department during the McCarthy era. And it was astonishing how how that occupied their lives, their world.
I mean, that's such a powerful time. I mean, we're in between a matinee and in an evening show, and I found it very interesting with the matinee set today, where we're sitting with a lot of people who I think really understand that kind of witch hunt and the terror here within on the homeland. You know, it's very different in here today of all the audience previews I've seen yet to the response to the McCarthy hearings and or just those private rooms where the terror they must have felt.
And as a result of that, you know, Julia's bloom, as you put it, happens in Paris. She discovers what to do with her gifts and what to do with her great mind and her enthusiasm. And she comes out of it literally a star. On a different track, her husband, Paul, comes to Paris as part of the Marshall Plan to explain to give the French people an idea of who we were, our art, our music. And he did exhibits and concerts and recitals. He organized those. And very soon after getting here, it began to be eaten away by the Red Scare. And so he left Paris feeling like a failure. So, I mean, we really, from the beginning, have wanted to track these two different journeys.
Absolutely. Doug, I mean, the love affair between Julia Child and, you know, they say, like, behind every good man is a good woman, but in this play, it's really that behind every good woman is a good man.
Absolutely.
And this love affair is so beautiful between her and her husband. You know, finding love later in life and celebrating each other and supporting each other. What was important to tell about that story?
Well, part of it was the idea of, you know, this love and this marriage blooming late in life. Because
it feels like a choice then, right?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
In that time period, you got married so young. It was just like, it wasn't like, oh, I choose you as my partner. It was just kind of like, it's time to get married, and this is who
and
I marry.
Of course, their meeting was unconventional. They met when they were both working for the OSS in the Pacific during the war. You know, so they were
interesting fact. Probably most people didn't know Julia Child was working in intelligence or the spy.
In intelligence. But yeah, so part of it was that. But also just the fact that, you know, we were able to portray, because their personalities were very different. And as Bill said, he did sort of feel like he was failing. So his career, he felt, was on a downhill slide, but he never really abandoned her. Once they became, once she became famous, they came back to the States, she became
huge.
Famous. Huge.
Blew up, yeah.
And he was always a part of her life and her career, even though he was, you know, for all intents and purposes, retired. She always included him in everything she did throughout her career until the day he died, even in the later years when, you know, he wasn't really quite all there. But he was definitely a part of her life throughout all those years when she was becoming famous and changing the culinary world and all that.
So one of the big challenges I would imagine in putting this play together is casting. And you know, it's so complex, you know. I mean, there are complex ideas, and yet it needs to seem so effortless. And obviously you all struck gold with your Julia. Talk to me. I mean, I know you've had relationships with you know, and worked with Karen many, many times, but Karen and Craig, who portray Paul and Julia, and really the heart of this play.
Well, we
what did you need
we
and
didn't
what were
really,
you looking for?
For a long time, we didn't allow ourselves to think about who would play Julia.
Right.
Just, you know, your
because the last so. Idea had been you in drag. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the idea of it is daunting. It's like, yeah. who do you get to do this?
Yep.
And so we didn't write with anyone in particular in mind. We wrote with the character in mind.
Uh-huh.
So, but I don't remember.
I don't either, except one day we just,
well, sometimes you have to read
it.
The play out loud, right?
Yeah.
You ask some friends, and sometimes it can happen that easily.
Yeah, but even before we had heard anything out loud, except for, you know, reading it to one another, Bill one day mentioned Karen, and I said, yeah, that's it. And she did the very first workshop, and it was... you know, she was there from the beginning.
Yeah.
She was great.
It's just a tour de force performance.
And she just
keeps
getting better.
So, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. What are the challenges of, what's challenging and exciting about moving from a 90-seat theater in Lakeview, that intimacy,
right.
to, this is a moment. This is a moment for Timeline Theater. It's
yes.
a moment in Chicago theater history with Broadway in Chicago and the Chicago Commercial Collective coming to Timeline and saying, let us take this to a bigger audience. Mm-hmm. And having it in one of the big Broadway in Chicago houses down here on Michigan Avenue. You have 500 people seeing the show now, 8 shows a week.
Mm-hmm.
What were the challenges in thinking, okay, do we rethink this entirely? Do we... and what was exciting about it? I mean, obviously, more people getting to hear the story, but...
Obviously, it's exciting to have a commercial production in downtown and to reach a new audience. I mean, we're really noticing that the audiences are very different.
Mm-hmm.
The audiences who come to the theater down here in, you know, downtown and in the Loop are different from the ones who go to the storefront theaters and the smaller theaters off Loop. And in terms of adapting to a different size house, it's been remarkably smooth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The show just works a charm in this space,
yeah.
I think, because it's a wonderful house, first of
mm-hmm.
all, and you know, our original design concept for it that Keith did just works beautifully in here. And
yeah, you
also,
saved a lot of things, like
hardly.
It's essentially the same set, except it's a little bit it gives us
right.
a few more possibilities
mm-hmm.
for changing the venue, for expanding into you know, into a sort of a broader palette. But it's essentially the same show. Physically, as it was when we did it at Timeline, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
It's thrilling because it still feels very intimate, even
it
though
does.
The house is 5 times as large.
Yeah,
and it's a lovely house.
Right.
It wraps around, and it doesn't. We've sat in the last row, and it doesn't feel cavernous at all.
Mm-mm.
But what I didn't expect, and you know, is by the nature of having a little more room, well, a lot more room on stage,
mm-hmm.
And really it's sort of the out-of-the-kitchen spaces
mm-hmm.
that this has created, is some of the larger ideas within the play really just sort of...
loft.
Yeah,
they
do.
Really
they
do.
They jump out at you. And I think to come back to a play that you've written and, for me, directed
mm-hmm.
3 years later... you want to believe you're a better actor, you're a better director, you're a better writer. You want to believe that the world and your own, working on your own craft has... And I think it was exciting to go back
mm-hmm.
in and go, huh, here's all this research that we were so proud of. We don't need that.
It doesn't need to be on the stage.
It doesn't need to be on the stage.
Keep
the focus on the story that you're telling and not show off your research.
And it made us look at, well, what was important? And it started, if you look at our original outline for the story, it's about this relationship,
mm-hmm.
Julia and Paul in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel is much stronger, and we've
mm-hmm.
really done, we've really tried to make his story stronger
mm-hmm.
Because it is unknown, and
mm-hmm.
It's funny what you can plan and what you learn as you go, you know.
Yeah.
And we were making changes. We made a change this morning.
Today.
Yes. It's so interesting because he really is like the dark horse, right? You know, yeah. I mean, he is kind of the strong center of this yeah. play, and his story comes across, you know, very clearly. I think so.
And Craig does a magnificent job. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't. We talked to. We did a lot of research, but my favorite part was talking to people who knew them.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and,
wow, yeah.
And they all would say, oh, Paul could be kind of gloomy.
Pretty dark. They said he had a very dark personality.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And it's not that Craig's that, but there's a part of Craig that's so beautifully grounded mm-hmm. that it's a lovely compliment mm-hmm. to Julia's mm-hmm. exuberance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it absolutely is. I feel like there's a sense of some loss within him that's kind of beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, to kind of move into this new place,
yeah.
this new America they're moving back to, this new
yeah.
chapter in their lives that is going to be, they don't even have a clue, you know, and we want to continue to emphasize this is really, you know, this is a story of Julia Child before she becomes famous.
That's right.
So before all of that happens,
right.
you know.
She didn't even know she was going to be Julia
no.
Child, right?
No. I mean, you know, yeah. that's what's so amazing. We have to mention, or I would like to mention, because I think, you know, the film came out around the same time, Julie and Julia, that you were first staging this show at Timeline. I imagine that gave you attention. Did that ever cause any apprehension? I mean, it's not the same story, even though it's the same character.
Right.
But,
yeah.
And I must say that, you know, you couldn't have a better kudo than to have the Tribune say, you know, Karen's performance is better than Meryl Streep's and, you know, Oscar winner
yeah.
that she
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
So, I would agree.
Any trepidation we had, you know, was momentary.
Yeah.
Was we saw the movie together, with PJ Powers, the artistic director of Timeline. We saw it together when we went out to dinner, had French food afterwards.
Yeah.
We talked about it, and it gave us a little trepidation. But I think after that evening, we never really worried about
right.
it, and we really never worried about it once it was in front of its first audience.
Yes,
because. And this was at the first workshop that we did that was months before the production actually
mm-hmm.
happened, that we had a full house in the middle of a snowstorm. These
right.
people came out because they wanted to hear this
yeah.
this script about Julia Child.
Yeah.
So it was people who knew Julia Child and that world. And all the comments afterwards was, oh, this is different. It's not the
yeah.
same thing at all. And
yeah.
and so we were very encouraged by that. And we found in the production that was the case. It is, and I think it's even more so now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a completely different story.
Completely different.
Even though the incidents in that movie cover some of the same history, the same, you know, chronological time period, they're telling two parallel stories.
Right.
And so they necessarily, you know, give short shrift to any of those scenes that happen
mm-hmm.
where we have a whole play to
yeah.
delve into what actually was happening to
mm-hmm.
them as people
mm-hmm.
when they were going through all the stuff that is maybe portrayed in the movie but is not gone into in depth because it's as much the contemporary writer's story
right.
as it is Julia's
right,
story.
Right, absolutely. And she's a larger-than-life character,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there is so much story to tell. But
mm-hmm.
But what I love about this is this play has it has an ease about it. Your writing has an ease about it, the direction,
you
know, the performances. They really sing in just kind of their truth and their honesty. And there's different times watching the play where you're like, oh, I identify with that person. I identify with that person. I identify
yeah.
with this, you know, either this ambition or this sense of not being enough or failure or, you know, F you, you know.
Or,
F
or
you
knowing that you're onto something extraordinary and people just won't listen.
Yeah.
These publishers in
yeah.
the 50s that, you know, they kept sending it and they had such a myopic view of what's Americans,
before the feminist movement too.
Well, exactly.
You know, and thank God a few women
then,
helped her along the
well,
way.
A few
it was all women.
Yeah.
It was her friend Avis DeVoto. It was Judith Jones, who was her editor at Knopf. You know, it was Simca who wrote the book with her.
Mm-hmm.
It was all these women who got it done because
mm-hmm.
the men were saying, oh, you know, American women don't want this.
Mm-hmm.
They want something that's convenient. They
mm-hmm.
you know, it was the 50s. That was the culinary trend. Everything was in, you know, was frozen or in a can or in a mix, and you know, convenience, you know, cooking was utilitarian. It wasn't
yeah.
the experience that we have today.
Yeah.
And I don't think she got much, I don't know that she got any credit for for being a feminist, because it was the culinary arts. It was a moment in history when, you know, women weren't supposed to be in the kitchen.
Right.
So, and what she did is say, well, you're all welcome in the kitchen.
Right.
Come on in.
Come on in. Come on in, and there's a little extra of this. Let's just throw it in there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it is a wonderful play. I am honored to be a part of it, and also honored to sit down and talk with you all about the journey, because it's really, you know, she had a 10-year journey to try to write this book, and I know it takes a long time to write a script, then to have a production, then to get to revisit it 3 years later. I mean, you all are on your own little bit of an odyssey with this project. So I encourage everyone to come out. The show has extended through October 20th, which is amazing. If you are in town, if you're coming to town, it's a show to, I would say, that's suited to anyone and everyone. To Master the Art is playing now through October 20th at the beautiful Broadway Playhouse. That's downtown Chicago in the Water Tower on Michigan Avenue. If you'd like tickets and information, you can visit BroadwayInChicago.com and set that all up. Bill, Doug, break a leg on opening.
Thank you.
And
thank
we'll
you.
See you at the theater.
Great.
Thanks.
Got something to say? Call us today. 312-21-BE-GAY.
So, Mitchell, maybe this week you and Pat can come with me and we'll go see Tomas.
I'd love to, yeah. Absolutely.
And I hope all of you will get to catch it as well. Coming up in weeks ahead, we've got some surprises for you. I'm not going to tell you what they are, but fall is right around the corner. And, you know, in terms of a great season for fall television and fall theater, it's also fall movies. And our friend Richard Knight Jr. has got a big announcement, as he is now running the Gay and Lesbian Film Festival here in Chicago. And he's going to be telling us very soon about all the movies coming out as a part of the festival. So that's very exciting. And other than that, gosh, you know, like Halloween and things are just around the corner. Mm-hmm. So it's fall in Chicago. It's a beautiful time of year. Hope you have a great week, everyone. And hopefully I'll see you in a seat at To Master the Art, because Mitchell and Pat will be there maybe this week.
Oh, wow.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.